Welcome. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network at republicbroadcasting.org. Hour two of the broadcast here on this Wednesday, the 24th of January, 2024. I'm your host, Richard Carey, and this is Beyond the Official Narrative. I have Stephen Douglas Whitener here as co-host and guest Michael Sledge. But, you know, if we were able to get Alex Jones back on for a minute, I would probably like to ask him if he thinks Bill Gates is likely to have blue helmet UN troops on U.S. soil alongside CCP militants forcing us at gunpoint to inject gay frog DNA into our bloodstreams. But first.
Okay.
But first, you know, when you talk about how the Republicans need to use the same tactics as the Democrats, I think that's kind of Duganist. You know, that reminds me of a bit of what Dugan was going for with his national Bolshevism, although he was kind of also, he was kind of shilling to cover for Jews, frankly, I think, and kind of a race traitor in the philosophies to compare it to nationalism. But, I mean, that's some of what that was trying to go for, I think, from what I read of his early college type pieces, Mike. So I don't know, what would you say to that?
Well, I would simply say this, you know, you have to play, if you care about your people and your country, and you're working within an immoral system, and the other side is breaking the law and ballot harvesting and doing all these kind of things that aren't good, if you're a serious political party about winning, you can't be bound down by morality against liars and cheats. You have to be willing to play the game the same way. And this is why, you know, people like the NSDAP and Mussolini and Franco were able to win during the communist insurgencies in Europe, because they said, hey, you know, you want to play the game? You want to steal votes? I'm going to steal votes. You want to do this? I'm going to do that. You know, and you know, I know that sounds bad, but at the end of the day, if you have a principled movement of moral people that know they're only cheating for a little while, it becomes a different ballgame. You know, and I don't see that here in America. I don't see it at all. I see this country as being weak. I see the Republican Party as a faux opposition designed to fail, you know. And so there is no real democracy. I mean, democracy is like the newest form of communism, you know. When they started pushing democracy, it was at the end of the Cold War with perestroika and all that. And was, you know, instead of saying communism, they said democracy or mob rule. But we used to have some sort of a Republican aristocracy. And some of that was bad. I mean, no political system is ever perfect. But to not be willing to wage war in a real war against your enemy on the same terms they're waging it, is you're destined to failure and you will lose. And the winners always rewrite history. And so I would say, if your cause is moral and you have dedicated movement that is dedicated to doing the right thing when they consolidate power, it's different from doing what the kosher communists do when they ballot, whatever. That's just my opinion, because you're playing the game. You have to win the war first before you can have an open society, you know?
And as far as the lack of racial unity advocated, lack of any sort of lack of racial unity and pro-Semitism in Dugan's national Bolshevism. But I mean, the way it was similar to what you described, because it was kind of a, supposed to be a fusion. He was suggesting, you know, of tactics of Marxist Bolshevik types and of National Socialist ideals in some ways. But yeah, it was kind of, it was pretty damn kosher.
But where I disagree with you on Duganism is that Dugan was allowed to be a philosopher over there to help push the Putin agenda into place, because in my opinion, it was our role in the West to scale back, to lose. I mean, the difference between me and other people that do shows like this is that I believe that we're being told now, like in, you know, during the Cold War, America was to be expansive. You had the Marshall Plan. You had all this kind of stuff going on. You had the pushing of a New World Order out of D.C. and the U.N. You had the Rockefellers. You had the Bushes, all this kind of stuff. You had expansion. You had the neocon agenda. I think that was designed to give victories and gain territory for the Eastern push that's now in effect. And now our job is actually to roll it back, you know, to not win those wars.
I'm certainly not pro Dugan. I'm not sure how you mean that. I I have a different view from you, but I mean, I'm just suggesting that, I mean, that's what he was trying to sell. It sounded like over here. I think maybe you're suggesting that he wasn't trying to sell anything to us over here, that it was solely for Russians, what he was writing. Is that what you mean?
Dude, Richard, I'm not trying to say that you're saying that at all. What I was trying to say was...
Okay.
Like, well,
I'm not a Duganist. Get it straight. I'm not a Duganist. You think you're tough?
But they allowed Dugan to do what he did against the Atlanticist powers. I've actually read a lot of Dugan. I love to read political stuff from all over the world. You know, the Atlanticist deal that he put forth, you know, is a very enticing thing to believe in, because it's true. You know, the whole, you know, pushback against NATO and the West and all this kind of thing. But what most people don't understand is that Dugan had connections to Brzezinski. He had connections to, you know, and if you read Brzezinski's book, The Grand Chessboard, which is an amazing book, and his other book, you know, he talks about, you know, a war with Russia might be necessary for the Eurasian shift, for a new economic order in the East, and, you know, a contrived war that might scale us back. And so what I would actually argue is that the new nationalism that you see in many ways in America and in Europe that's more isolationist is more dangerous than even like internationalism, which is different from globalism. And like a lot of people that don't listen to or haven't read a lot of economic or political theory don't understand the difference between globalism and internationalism. Now, internationalism is interesting, you know, it's a whole different ballgame. And so there's been a battle going on behind the scenes for quite some time between internationalists and globalists, you know. But I would say that Dugan's role was to be the new Rasputin, or the new you know, Albert Pike of anti-Atlanticism in a spiritual form or a philosophical form that could be. Yeah.
Would the internationalists, though, be in line with, like, you know, the international Jew strategy? I mean, would that be the same? And then the globalist is this new technocratic sort of configuration?
There is a split within the Jewish power structure, which a lot of people don't talk about, which I find, this is why I love doing shows with you, man, because you actually ask me these questions. There is a split between international Judaism and global Judaism, in that most of the globalist, you know, Zionist agenda is more based upon gaining territory and moving it to the East more, okay? The difference in internationalism is that internationalism is like a worldview of a New World Order, kind of like what Carol Quigley talked about, which was more in tune with old British and American and Western institutions leading the cause and playing ball with Jews as well, but not letting them completely run the show. Okay.
Stephen, would you like to jump in?
Yeah. Are you saying Chabad and WEF are at odds? Is that how does this split fall out? Well, you know, who's who?
They're at odds, but not really. I mean, this is kind of like when you watch The Godfather and you got all these families sitting around the table and they're arguing over who's going to run the heroin trade over here, the coke trade here, the olive oil business here, the old, you know, this is all like La Kosher Nostra, you know, stuff that's being debated. There is not the biggest mistake, Stephen, that a lot of people make by listening to alternative media is they believe there's one group of people, and there is, but there's differing opinions on how to bring it about. Okay.
Yeah, like I could see some of the Likudniks siding more with the internationalists. They're okay with some nationalist sovereignty of different nations as opposed to this globalism. You know, they might not like a lot of the things being pushed, such as the you know, the green agenda and all the repercussions of that.
So you're seeing the battle now, Richard, take place between, you have your Trumpians, your Trump wing of Judaism, and your Biden wing of Judaism. I would argue that your Biden wing of Judaism is more international based, more based upon the importance of England, the crown, more important importance placed upon NATO, this kind of thing. And then you're seeing this other wing of a kosher world agenda that's being, you know, more in line with the Eurasian shift, the BRICS, even within Israel, which is interesting. You know, this is why Netanyahu split from Trump. I think Netanyahu feels like he has more connections to the international team of the old Bush power, which is the same as the Biden power. And I think you see this new Chabad, new, more radical religious Jewish power coming into play, which Trump has more sway over. So, but at the end of the day, we lose. I want to make that clear. I'm not promoting one side or the other. I'm just trying to, you know, I love studying and breaking down the different people involved at the commission table. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's what I'm trying to do here. But
Stephen?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Whoever wins, we lose. I don't know if I mentioned this. The only way I see them selecting Trump is if Netanyahu, if Bibi and Biden have a falling out, the way, you know, how he drifted away from Trump there. If they were to fall out, then they might install Biden for that reason. I mean, install Trump for that reason. Warp speed, baby. That's what Trump was all about, too, another level.
Well, I see a few callers building up. One's been on for a little bit in the queue. Let's go to Brent in Dallas. Brent, how you doing? Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. Excellent political analysis by your guest. Listen, guys, I just have a question. I remember this thing where Trump was, you know, coming on TV and that kind of thing, and I remember the image of him just standing there and then somebody asking him why he was going to do something. And he pointed his finger straight to the heavens and it said that they told me to. Does anybody else remember that?
Gentlemen?
Oh, absolutely. And that was the same time that was actually in the front of the White House at a press conference where he did that. And he said, I am the king of Israel. I've heard the message. And let me tell you, great call. Thank you for bringing that up, because, you know, what Trump is doing, because look, ultimately Trump is a secularist. He's not a religious guy. He doesn't believe in anything except his own ego at the end of the day. But what he's playing to is, I think Trump, just like Elon Musk and just like a lot of other people, has made a move in believing that the future is in the Eurasian shift. I believe Trump believes that. That's why he made the golf deal with Saudi Arabia. You remember that? Okay?
Yeah.
This, all very important to understand. Trump has made so many deals with moving the thing to the east and working with Chabad and more religious sects of Judaism that believe in the Eurasian shift. Because at the end of the day, the radical Orthodox Jews are Asiatic. They believe in the Asian economy. They have no problem with that. Even Iran is not a problem, to be honest with you. So they, this move to the east, and that was the Dugin thing. It was the Atlanticist or evil, you know, the internationalist order has to be destroyed. We have to have a new order. Not opposed to what you want for globalism, but a new system, because the old system, frankly, doesn't work. And there's a new emerging economy in the east, a new emerging population. And I think that Putin, I think Xi, I think that Israel, I think that Saudi Arabia, Dubai, I think that even Trump understands that. Trump is a, you know, if nothing else is important, he understands the economic tides that are turning. And I really believe that Trump feels that America under his leadership probably would be better by making deals with Putin, Xi, and the East over the old internationalist powers of the Crown and Western Europe, if that makes sense. Sorry.
Yeah, that made sense. In particular, do you remember exactly what he was talking about when he was pointing to the heavens and said that they told me to?
Oh, yeah. It was almost like he was the prophet sent from.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, he was the prophet. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, because, I agree with everything you're saying. Appreciate it. That's all I had for today.
Yeah, great call, man. Thanks for calling in, brother. You know?
Yeah. And thank you.
Appreciate it, sir. Oh, you had something else to add there, Mike, to that?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, Trump is not a religious or a spiritual person. He's a man of economics, of business, of making money, of selling out. He's an entertainer. He's an actor. So, you know, wherever he sees the wind blowing, he's going to go. That's my opinion of Donald Trump. I don't think he has any real, I don't think Trump has any real morality or real foundation that he won't negotiate. That's non-negotiable, if that makes sense.
Stephen, what would you like to add? Caught Stephen.
Could not, is that, oh, yeah. You know, this does not want to come off. I apologize. What I mean, yeah. Trump, to me, that it's like he got, quote unquote, us to take the vax. I mean, people, who put him in would have never taken it if Hillary had come out with it. I think that was a big part of that too. I've heard that put forth, and I don't think it really makes that much difference who's in there. We'll never vote for the puppeteers. It just, you know, it's all dependent on how things are going between them than who we even vote for, I think. And just like you said, planned out in advance. And the only thing I see is if those gangs have a turf war over there. Things are, I do think things are getting more disruptive with the warfare, even that the economy is going to be supply chain problems and all that with the Red Sea, even more than there was with COVID, perhaps. That could happen. And I don't think it's going to be like a blow up, like you said, but with this, it will hinge on this selection coming up this year. It's all coming to a head, so to speak. Yeah, I know we got callers. Go ahead, sir.
Projections for the economy before we go to calls, Mike?
Oh, yeah. I think that they will stabilize the economy after July. The inflation has already started going down. The stock market is up to 37,000, if not higher, as of tomorrow. I think that's all part of the plan. And here's another thing. I'm glad you brought this up, Richard. The number one issue in the New Hampshire Republican primary was immigration. The economy was now second or third, which means if you're not running against an incumbent president on the economy being the number one problem, you most likely will not win in a big election. So the fact that immigration is number one in a Republican primary means that the base is riled up. They don't like the immigration thing. I don't either. But I'm just an honest guy that looks at numbers. And the economy has been taken off the table. I think by November, inflation will be down pretty low. I think your stock market, I think the IRAs for most people working will be pretty good. And I think that that'll lead to a Democratic victory. I stand by that.
Let's go to the next caller. Alan in Texas. Hey, a fellow RBN host from Sunday mornings, Republic of Texas. Alan, welcome, sir.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen, if I'm here. Stephen, Richard, Michael. Michael, thank you for bringing up Zbigniew Brzezinski's books and Carol Quigley. I've read all that stuff, you know. I've read it and I've reread it, and it's pretty damn scary. But, you know, really, I called what y'all were talking about earlier, you know, about Donald Trump, you know. Why do people have the memory of a gnat? You remember after Donald Trump won the nomination, you know, he was nominated on Hillary for president because she was just an evil bitch, you know. No one liked her, you know. And he's like, oh, when I get elected president, you're going to prison. What did he say the first morning? The morning after he got the election, he said, well, they're really good people and they've been through enough. I'm not going to recommend any charges being brought against them, you know. Blah, 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 you know. And every press conference you saw Donald Trump in, who was over his shoulder? Colonel Mandel Kushner, right? Oh, no, wait a minute. That was Wilson, Colonel Mandel House. But Colonel Mandel Kushner was over his shoulder every. Do you people not believe that this is all a stage play? I know you guys do. I mean, I hate to sound like a black pill. You know, I've been on RBN for 8.5 years now, which is a pretty damn long run, you know. And I've been able to say what I want to. And, you know, I just called in and made a donation, you know, for the Rebel Madman's quilt, you know. And I will appeal to the satellite listeners, you out there listening on satellite systems. Call in if you want to keep hearing like you have been for the last 18, 20 years, whatever you've been listening on the satellite. Call in and make a donation and keep RBN on the air. This needs to be here. I don't stream. I don't do computers. I am an analog man in a freaking nightmarish digital world. And I don't like what it's done. And I'll shut up any response to what I've said.
Mike?
Oh, yeah. Great call. And I love your show, by the way. I actually listen a lot of times. And thank you for doing what you've done. And anybody that puts out content and fights the fight is doing a good thing, and I support you, brother, all the way. And let me say this. I wanted to reiterate, there are two teams. This is why, you know, when you have Alex Jones, like I did earlier, joking around, talking about, you know, Millet went to the World Economic Forum. Elon Musk went there. He stood up in their face, and he told them, I'm not eating your chicken cordon bleu and your Waldorf salad. I wanted to eat the New World Order. Look. This is all kayfabe, which means like fake shit in wrestling, you know? And let me just say that. They have two teams, okay? They always have dueling teams within the World Economic Forum. That's why Vivek Ramaswamy, right, that supported, you know, that Alex Jones pushed and other people pushed, who was on the stage, who might even be a vice president potentially. I'm just saying it's probably not going to happen, but still funny. He was a young leader of the WEF, you know. So they got two different agendas at play. You have the international agenda and you have the globalist agenda. But they're both two different plans for global domination from the kosher world order system, to put it nicely, you know. And there's a real, you know, debate taking place. But at the end of the day, these are kingmakers and oligarchs who sit behind a table that don't care, you know, if troops die or if people die in wars or whatever. This is a power play, and it's two differing factions playing upon which will be the ruling faction of the system, of the global system, or the international system, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what we see taking place here. So we see Alex Jones talk about, Milley really gave the New World Order hell and Klaus Schwab hell. I've never been invited to the World Economic Forum. Richard, have you? Steven?
No.
Yeah?
Okay. Hey, guys, if I can say this, you know, Barry Goldwater in his book with no apologies, you know, his biography, you know, talks about, is he my God? No, but can you get truth from everywhere? You know, he talks about elitist cliques within these organizations, like the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral. Within these organizations, there are elitist cliques. They are not just one united thing. It's like even within these bastardized, you know, controlling organizations, there are cliques within these organizations that have their own purposes. You know, and you know, it's like who was it? One of the Rothschilds, you know, at one point said, "Well, if we have to sacrifice some of the lower brethren to gain our objectives, so be it." You know, it's like the Jews will sacrifice Jews to get what the Jews want, depending on what faction of Jews you are.
You're absolutely right, and guess what? It's the long walk down the long hallway of the institutions, brother. Right?
Yeah. Hey, with that, my friends, I'm not going to stay on. I won't take up too much time. Thank you for a very cogent conversation. Love y'all. Appreciate it. We'll talk to y'all later. Bye.
I always love your call. Thank you, Alan. And Stephen, did you want to add something? Oh, Mike, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's a long walk down the hallway of the institutions, as Carol Quigley said in Tragedy and Hope, which I have a copy of in my apartment. But the problem with that book was that Carol Quigley, you know, that was kind of like a limited hangout, you know. And I know people listening to this show know what that means, a limited hangout. You know, Carol Quigley released, you know, he was a Georgetown professor. He was the main guy that was responsible for Bill Clinton. He was like Bill Clinton's mentor when he was at Georgetown, you know. But he released Tragedy and Hope because he said, at the end of the day, I've read their papers, I've read their charts, and it's an Anglophile network of control. No, it's not. So he put that little poison in there. It's not an Anglophile network. It's a kosher network of control. But that little lie is what created Alex Jones and these other clowns, because Carol Quigley produced a limited hangout called Tragedy and Hope, which was a great book if you can read between the lines. But ultimately, the kosher money powers took over everything, and they infiltrated the crown through Cromwell, you know, post-Longshanks. They infiltrated the banking system, Napoleon's death at Waterloo, the consolidation of the markets of England. I mean, it's all right there. So Carol Quigley's book was a limited hangout, but it's still an important book to read. Anyway.
Oh, I hear the music.
Yeah, it didn't go back that far.
Yeah, I want to hear, Stephen, your thoughts on the other side, and then we have another caller to get to. We'll be right back.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news. Real talk. Real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Charles de Gaulle once said, actually, it's difficult to envision in this regard any other criterion, any other standard than gold. Yes, gold, which does not change in nature, which can be made into either bars, ingots, or coins, which has no nationality, and which is considered in all places and all times the immutable and fiduciary value par excellence. So when the question is, why gold? It's simple, my friends. The answer to that question is simply, why not? Like it or not, precious metals will always be the world's reserve currency. Even though nations do not define their currency by their worth in, say, gold, individuals still buy gold and silver to protect themselves from inflation. The more money a nation's central bank pours into the economy, the less value its currency, the dollar is, which means the price of everything else rises. $21 up for a bag of dog food. Seeing that the dollar is cheap, that's why the cost of everything goes up. It's because the buying power, the value of the dollar, has tanked. It's worth nothing. And yet gold that your family would have owned in 1907 will buy at least the same amount of goods, if not far more. William McPhee once stated, it's extraordinary how many emotional storms one may weather in safety if one is ballasted with ever so little gold. The truth about money, gold versus cash in a crisis, gold, a valuable thing to store, the power of gold in times of crisis, historical sketch of paper currency. Oh, and beware the ides of rare coin dealers and Alan Greenspan's speech on gold and economic freedom. How interesting. I'm going to give you gold and silver in five easy lessons. Seeking out the most efficient and most secure route to owning gold and converting it into widely accepted currency is the next best thing to enjoying gold-backed currency, my friends. In a world of central bankers hell-bent on devaluing our savings, you need to own private gold standard. Contact me, Jeffrey Bennett at Kettle Moraine Limited, by calling our phone number at 602-799-8214. That's 602-799-8214.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on Long-Term Food Storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
And we are back, folks, beyond the official narrative here on Republic Broadcasting. Richard Carey here with co-host Stephen Douglas Whitener and guest Michael Sledge. And I want to echo Alan in Texas's sentiment. He, of course, is one of the hosts of the Sunday morning broadcast, Republic of Texas Radio. If you haven't, you should check that out. It's definitely a good broadcast. That's 8 a.m. Central, 8 to 10 a.m. Central Sundays. But yes, for those listening on satellite, and I don't have the information to be able to mention for people who would want to listen on satellite how to find it or how that works, but you can call in to donate, satellite listeners, at this number. I'll mention it twice, 800-724-2719, extension 3. That number again, 800-724-2719, extension 3. And you could also mail cash, check, or money order payable to just the initials RBN, payable to. And you could mail that over to Republic Broadcasting Network, 2251 Double Creek Drive, number 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. And we greatly appreciate it, folks. We do have this fundraiser through this month for $250 or more. And if you have date in November through to the end of January, cumulatively, if you've donated $250 or more, say, make a note, you want to be in the fishbowl. Have your name in for the drawing. This is going to be a custom-made, high-quality. I mean, Mr. Gaddy says this would be worth many times more than that in the amount of care and skill involved in this. So this is the St. Andrew's Cross / Confederate battle flag quilt. And the winner will be chosen at the end of January. Again, from the people who have donated 250 or more and have specified, you know, that they want to be in the drawing for the Rebel Madman Rabble Razor, a quilt. And, of course, you'll get a lot of other great goodies, you know, RBN mug, RBN T-shirt, RBN business cards, RBN bumper stickers, the whole schmear. Okay, so before we go to the next caller, we have some lines open if anyone else is interested. Stephen, your thoughts, sir, and feedback to Alan.
I appreciate you calling, Alan. I always try to listen to Alan too. Same time on Sunday that Thought Crime Live comes on Saturday, y'all, 8 to 10 Central. And I really appreciate you doing this beautiful quilt, and we want to keep RBN going on the air. And you said that you said read between the lines for Tragedy and Hope, Mike. Man, you got to like to read too, because that's a tome, and it's hard to just, and it doesn't go back as far early as you were mentioning with Cromwell and all. If memory serves, it starts somewhere right around the South African thing, you know, right around in that era, and when this thing was coalescing. But the sequel to that, the one that was called The Anglo-American Empire, describes the kind of world that y'all were talking about earlier, where, well, China makes this, you know, this part, and we can't go to war because everybody's dependent on everybody else to run their military, basically. And that was the kind of solution that these people had found to keep us from going to that conflagration. But it's going to be limited war and spread slowly. The real war is the one that they're waging against us, sending us off to die for them and their profit there, as well as reinforcing their power here at home. I mean, that's all that war really accomplishes anyway, you know. So this, I don't see winning the war to be able to set up some state that's going to work if we're going to do it again over and over again. It's just like, it just to me, and also I wanted to say that.
Well, the Bretton Woods era is over, right?
Yes, sir. Oh, I agree with that. Now, that change is happening too, that kind of change. Something on that level is coming as well between now and 2030. I mean, they won't let you know exactly when, but sure enough, and I think that the upswing with the market the way it is pricing some expansion of the war into that own a lot of sectors are cutting way back now. Inflation may be down, but people losing their jobs too. A lot of layoffs are happening. I don't think the economy is so rosy.
Well, let's go to Scottish John in Austin. Hey, great to hear from you, Scottish John. What's on your mind tonight, sir?
Hi, Richard. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, loud and clear, sir.
Man, well, I just thought I'd chip in on the Trump issue. I can't tell you what people in Scotland think of Donald Trump because you're not allowed that language on your network, yeah? So I'll go somewhere else. I was just watching something on YouTube the other night there. It's a video of this political satire show on the BBC called Have I Got News For You? And it's a little panel show, and they go over the week's news and throw in a good bit of humour, so it's always a very entertaining watch. And one of the things that popped up was there was a clip of Donald Trump, and I think he must have been addressing a crowd at a rally or something like that, and he was telling them how great he thought WikiLeaks were, and then there was another clip, how great he thought WikiLeaks were. And then in the third clip, someone's asking him, what do you think of WikiLeaks? He says, I don't know, I've never heard of them. And then another one, someone asked him, what do you think of Prince Andrew? He says, I don't know, I've never met him. Well, there's three photographs of him, Prince Andrew. One of them's got Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell in it. But the guy's just a liar, just a liar. And just one other one I'll share with you. You know, he opened a golf course in Scotland about 8 or 9 years ago up near Aberdeen, and they made a video of it called You've Been Trumped, and it was on YouTube for a while and then it disappeared. Well, it came back a couple of weeks ago and I watched it again, and I would highly recommend you watch it because I think it's just about as good an example of what a schmuck this guy really is. Honestly, he's just a piece of crap. And speaking of a piece of crap, there was a bunch of young guys there, and I don't know how they managed to do it, but they filled the whole 18 holes on his golf course, they filled him full of crap, poop, shit, whatever you want to call it. And it went down a tree. Made me laugh anyway. All right.
Yes, yeah, no, for all you gentlemen, I mean, I prefer just avoiding the feces references, but no, in general, yeah, it's quite questionable. I mean, his past with Chabad as well, for that matter. You know, we've seen him at the Wailing Wall. Well, we've seen Putin at the Wailing Wall, for that matter.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as the kind of...
Ass off.
Well, the kind of loyalty, I mean, you know, what you're saying as far as Trump, I mean, yeah, I don't think anyone here would disagree with, you know, the questionable. Mike, what would you like to say?
Well, I'd like to go back to the Carol Quigley Tragedy and Hope thing, because this is important. Great Britain was taken over a long time before even the Rothschild thing occurred, you know. So what I was trying to get at to you, Stephen, was when Carol Quigley in his book Tragedy and Hope says it's an Anglophile network, it's not really. By that point, it's not an Anglophile network.
Right.
It's a
Covenant network. They had been taken over long before that. Yeah, exactly. Yes, sir. It didn't. That book doesn't go back and cover that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. But I'm saying he makes it sound like that. You know, the
I'm sorry, Mike. You cut out there a little bit.
Yeah, I cut out for a second. I had a freaking ex girlfriend trying to call me. But you know, look, what I'm trying to say is that England, Great Britain was taken over. It was the first Western country to be co-opted by these people, you know, in a big way. And then the British Empire spread out from that with the banking institutions and all this. And, you know, Carol Quigley is a limited hangout because what he does in that book is say it's an Anglophile network, still putting out the belief that, you know, white people or like a European aristocracy has power over global government, which is baloney. I mean, they still sit at the table, but they take orders from these, you know, kosher people. Believe me, they do. Or people that are interlopers or married into. You know what I mean? So...
Yeah, I don't disagree Even? With you. Yeah, I don't disagree with you. As always, you can, and you just similar analogy. You vote for the puppet, but never the puppeteer.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But great call, also. But you know, but here's the deal. You know, I hear a lot of people in alternative media talking about the Eurasian shift, the BRICS. You know, Russia, China is going to save us. Look, you know. Those countries are deeply embedded with the other side of the other economic program of global control. China, Russia, you know, Chabad Lubavitch headquarters is in Russia. Okay. Putin has no problem. He's still great friends with Netanyahu to this day. Still last week, I think, or is it last week or 2 weeks ago, had a new proclamation where he reinforced the Mao Revolution. Well, the Mao Revolution was a revolution from Yale. Mao was a Yale attendee. Mao, all of his advisors were Zionists. You know, so this idea, and by the way, Jonathan Pollard, the biggest spy for Israel, that Trump pardoned, by the way, that Trump pardoned before he left office. One of his, he pardoned Jonathan Pollard and a bunch of black rappers. no genuine people, by the way.
Warp speed, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so the whole cabinet of Mao was all Jewish. Israel Epstein. I can go on forever. You know, it was a creative. It was like Castro, who was also kosher, by the way. Castro was. So it was a fake. All communist revolutions worldwide were, in fact, Zionist kosher revolutions. Okay? That's what they were. So this idea that Vladimir Putin, who was head of the KGB, who was friends with Xi, who just reaffirmed the Mao revolution as being a great thing in China, is working on behalf of Western alliances is ridiculous, you know. And, you know, so there are two or three, basically two competing factors within this world order system that are fighting and vying for power. And I believe, it's my opinion, that Trump is on the side of the Russian, China, Saudi Arabian side of that economic thing. And, you know, as he should be, because let me tell you something. I'm not supporting Trump, but I'm saying if you're a businessman looking straight at numbers, I mean, the West is dying. I mean, you know, Europe's dying. America's dying. You know, if you're going to put money on a new productive class of people for industry or a bring back of a new economy, it's going to be in the East. These people are like freaking robots, you know? So,
yeah.
I don't blame them. So, I hope you understand what I'm saying.
No, totally. I mean, with all this immigration and the need to avoid the elephant in the living room, they have to destroy meritocracy, you know, in Europe and the U.S., not to mention the fact that they've already outsourced. Because of wages, most manufacturing, as you mentioned, to the East. So, all these things combined, it's expected as far as Trump having these different stances or whatever. I almost mentioned Kushner. I don't even think it's necessary. As far as him being blackmailed by Epstein, I don't think that's necessary. He has enough ties, you say.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't matter. Here's the thing, Richard, you can go back to the calls, but it's like this. It's like, you know, are we going to go to war with a country that produces the bolts and engines for our aircraft that are going to bomb them? It's not going to happen. I mean, China, you know, unfortunately, you know, produces most of the product that works with the U.S. military. So this idea we're going to have World War III is ridiculous.
So is Eretz Israel ever going to come to fruition?
Well, you know, my opinion on Israel, by the way, Richard, is very, I guess you could say different from other people. I believe that most international Jews do not like the state of Israel, okay? And, you know, Henry Kissinger said in 2012 or 2013, Israel would not exist beyond 2024, 2025. I don't believe they would be the same as they were after that. Look, most Jews, honestly, do not like the state of Israel. You can look at people like Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, blah, blah, blah. Most left-wing Jews who control the pro-Palestinian rallies, by the way. Most pro-Palestinian rallies are controlled by, like, chicks like Amy Goldstein. Yeah, I'm pro-Palestinian. I'm an organizer. You know, yeah, yeah. All right.
And so would these people be in favor of most of those Jews in that part of the world relocating to Ukraine? Ukraine becoming like a second New York for the Jewish people?
I mean, not necessarily. I mean, they still got New York, Washington, D.C., St. Petersburg, you know, Beijing. They can go anywhere, you know?
So, well, I mean, you know, they have so much, they have enough influence, though. I mean, when you look at Brussels, when you look at Amsterdam, Germany, Germany and France, I mean, you know, definitely.
I think
London, you didn't mention London, but.
Oh, well, London's like their biggest guy. But, you know, I think that, you know, they have enough power globally where they don't even need Israel. And as a matter of fact, when the World Zionist Congress connected in like 28 or 26, it was split between, you know, international Zionism as to whether the state of Israel would be a good thing or a bad thing. I think, I mean, this is my opinion. I think the state of Israel is a bad optics for them. And I think that you'll see more and more pressure to reduce the state of Israel from what it is now and not get rid of it. But I think they'll be demographically replaced by Arabs who they'll have to include in the system over time. I think demographically they can't win a war like they are now. And I think in the next 50 years, Israel will be almost non-existent. You know, that's actually my opinion. But that's what they want. It's not that we're winning, okay? We're not winning anything. It's that the smarter Jews never would have put Israel there in the first place, if that makes sense.
Stephen?
Well, you know, what they're doing to Gaza, though, they're just that's over the top. Like you said, they're never going to be looked at the same way again. That's for sure. And they just kind of signed away what was Artsakh, you know, or Nagorno-Karabakh, however, whichever side of that coin you're on, with a ceasefire the other day. Just okay, well, that's gone now too. Just the same way they'll do the same thing with Gaza at some point, I believe.
Well, there isn't an element of international Jewry that never wanted, and it was always split. If you look at the International Zionist Congress in the late 20s, you know, after the Balfour and all this, they had a debate, and it was split. I mean, a lot of Jews did not want a state of Israel because they felt like they were better off just like staying incognito and parasiting, you know what I mean? But, you know, having said that, I don't think the modern state of Israel can exist in 20 more years. Just like I don't think that the West or America can, unless there's radical change, to be honest with you. So I think that both those things are tied together politically, if that makes sense. So
David?
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, hey, we do have another caller. I see Anthony in Tuscan. Anthony, welcome.
Two sides. Everybody says the same thing. Hello.
Yes, I hear you. I hear you, Anthony. Yes, sir.
Yes. The comments that I wanted to make is he's absolutely right. Israel has no right to exist because they are an occupied territory. But the issue that I'm bringing up is to make people know that the state, under the Second Amendment, in order to maintain a well-regulated militia, the right of people to keep and bear arms, every state should barricade their state because that's a military invasion. And the Constitution amended states by 1827, the states were allowed to admit certain people into the states from Europe because they were to be Anglo-Saxon, Germanic, Scandinavian, kindred people. Every member that signed the Declaration of Independence and the Articles of Confederation, as well as the Articles of the U.S. Constitution, were white, Anglo-Saxon, Germanic, Scandinavian, kindred people. And a nation is a color. So it's not a race. A nation is a race, and it is not a mix of a race. Whereas a nation is, like when you think of Japan, You think it was that them having that particular look about them, Chinese, Indians, East Indians, God split them all up. He made them different. They looked different, and they were not supposed to be mixed. The what this man he uses the proper word as not Zionist, not Jew, but some other word. Well, the thing I want to bring up, Biden is in treason because the Constitution demands they collect $20 for everyone the United States admits into the country in gold, not Federal Reserve notes, which have been devalued 3,000%. And it takes 30 Federal Reserve notes, Jewish-issued, which I call occupational script, to redeem 1 ounce of silver from the United States Treasury or the U.S. Mint.
Okay, all right. Well, we're just about out of time. Thank you for all that. Let's get some feedback. Stephen?
I'd never heard about that. I'd like to know where that is in the Constitution, but I've never heard
Mike, that. Is there anything you'd like to respond that the caller mentioned in the points?
Yeah, absolutely. The Constitution doesn't matter. Gold doesn't matter. Money doesn't matter. They got the guns. They got the power. We lost, and we got to get used to it. Thank you for having me on, Richard.
It was a pleasure as always, Michael. And look forward to doing this again. Stephen, you as well, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's great to talk to you again, too, Mike.
And it's going to be great. You're going to have Survivors of the Liberty on, what is that, Mr. Gaddy's broadcast on Saturday?
His broadcast Saturday afternoon, yes, sir.
And what time is that, Stephen?
3 to 6 Central Time.
Central 3 to 6, exactly. Thank you. All right. Well, folks, please support us at republicbroadcasting.org. Click on that donate page. We could really use your help right now. It's been a rough time with some extra biannual bills. Make sure that we can keep broadcasting this uncensored content, and we will speak again soon with your help. Until then, folks, transcend the construct. Regards.
1 of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.